Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Banging Book Club, the fortnightly podcast where we read books about sex and or gender and talk about it. I'm Hannah Witten.
I'm Lena Norms.
And I'm Lucy Moon.
And this month we read The Virgin Suicides by Geoffrey Eugenides, or as Siri would say, Eugenides. Siri would not understand me.
Eugenides.
Ended up having to ask who wrote The Virgin Suicides. It's like, Geoffrey Eugenides. Okay, Siri.
We've actually read one book by Geoffrey previously in the book club.
Yeah, in 2016.
We read Middlesex.
Which we were like, about.
And this one I have to take responsibility for, whether you guys liked or not, because I suggested this one. Having kind of read Middlesex and not liked it, tried to read The Marriage Plot and thought it was fucking awful.
That was his third book.
That's right. His third book, but this is his first book, and for me, it's one of my favourite books, and this is like my third or fourth reading, I think.
So, oh, wow, okay. And this was mine and Lucy's first reading.
So I'll take rap if you don't like it. It's chill. It's my fault.
As a positive to start with very briefly, It's beautifully written.
So well.
It is honestly a work of art to read.
I feel like I'm bad at noticing that stuff. The only book that I remember like actually noticing it as I was reading it was Trumpet, because I was so swept away with it. Whereas this, I was reading it going, you know why I know that this is linguistically great? Because I don't understand half of it.
Yeah.
It was just going on all metaphors
and things like that go over my head a lot, and there are a lot of words that I don't understand, and I can't be bothered to Google every sentence I read.
Yeah. It's hard to like, scan I just, read. You have to, like,
and that's why I have a lot of trouble with classics and stuff. It's because I don't know. I'm definitely one of those people who enjoys books and enjoys reading, but is made to feel stupid by certain texts. Yeah. This one did make me feel stupid reading it.
Oh, really?
Even though I enjoyed it, but they always do make me feel stupid.
I think with this one, it's definitely not, while there's obviously some very dramatic scenes and pivots in the plot, most of it is sitting with the characters and like exploring inside their minds, and it's not like very narratively driven. Like
no, it really meanders.
It ain't your Hunger Games.
No, see, I love me some plot.
Whereas I'm the sort of person that goes into an art gallery and gets super excited and is like, oh, I get to learn about the context of this, and gets really excited. And I love poetry and stuff. So for me, it's like,
I've not been a poetry person.
And
this is why I'm excited about next month's book.
What's next month's again?
Has no narrative, but it's our science book.
Come As You Are, right?
Yeah. Come As You Are. That'd be cool. Right, Virgin Suicide sound reviews, ladies.
Should we trigger warning?
Yeah.
Trigger warning, suicide.
and themes surrounding suicide, which you can probably imagine.
And maybe like depression.
Yeah.
I mean, you
guys.
Essentially
abuse?
You guys know yourself best. So, I mean, like, you can guess what's in this book.
Yeah.
From the blurb. And that's what we're going to be discussing.
Yeah.
Pretty honestly. Sound reviews.
Ah! That's my.
That was very evangelical. You let your wrists go like you're in Mississippi, like in a church. Like,
oh my god, praise thee.
Oh my god, I loved it.
Evangelical.
Mine would be.
You sounded like what I imagine whales sound like when they talk to
each other. Sounds like an ejaculating Free Willy over here.
Oh my god. I'm so sorry, listeners.
They came here for this.
Yeah, it's true.
I won't apologise. My sound review is And that's me kissing my pincered fingers.
Yeah.
Like an Italian in a really bad advert. Yes. That's your Domino lit.
I love it.
I just really respect him as an author, and I wish I could write like him, and I would like
yeah.
to.
Yeah.
One day. However, I think this is a book that none of us hadn't heard of. Like, and I think most people, when we were tweeting and interacting with people, know what at least what it is or have seen the film. I wanted to go through first what we thought this book would be like, and then what it was actually like.
So, I haven't seen the film, and I also haven't seen a trailer for it either, so I was going into this really, really blind.
Mm-hmm.
I think the most I knew was that Kirsten Dunst was in it. And I went in literally just knowing the title,
mm-hmm.
and then maybe I read the blurb, and I thought that... I think in my head I was comparing it to Perfume. Mm.
What's Perfume?
So sorry. Perfume is a book about this man who has like an insanely intense sense of smell, but he also is murderous and goes around killing virgins because he loves the way that they smell, and then kills them, and then from their skin and stuff and their odour makes perfume out of virgins. So it's kind of like fantasy, because obviously that's not like scientific and you can't fucking do that. But
it sounds like a great beach read.
But it's amazing because it's like this guy, like the way that smell is described in that book is incredible. And then it's just like this weird thing where he goes around killing virgins and taking their smells.
Classic.
Anyway, I was expecting something like,
so like with that psychological kind of tone. Thriller of like...
Yeah, I thought it was like going to be like...
Mr. Ripley kind of
like culty.
Yeah.
Like I thought it was going to be like these five... girls, because also I don't think I knew they were sisters going into it. I thought it was gonna be like these five girls who were virgins, and then from reading it I was like, one of them may not be a virgin. And I thought it was gonna be like this weird religious culty packed suicide.
I completely thought it was gonna be culty packed witchy. That was my thoughts going in. Knew they were sisters, knew they died, didn't know anything else about the book, and knew Sofia Coppola directed the film. And yeah, I think kind of thought I'd like it because it's well within my genre of classic, it's postmodern, right? It's postmodern. Yeah, postmodern classic, well-written thing.
For me, this is one I didn't...
About women.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's yeah. the draw, isn't it? I think I didn't read it on either of my like courses for literature, but I always knew it existed. But I was kind of avoiding it because I thought it was going to be really cliche and like, I don't know, I felt like it was kind of like how I avoid On the Road, because I'm like,
Oh,
I've never met anyone I've liked that liked On the Road. So I'm like, probably
really
not going
to
read
do
that.
Want to Jack, read it.
Oh, it's like that fuck Jack boy Kerouac. Book that every boy on Tinder reckons they've read. It's like that and Into the Wild.
Yeah.
Like, give me fucking strength. So I just.
Every boy that tells me Into the Wild really spoke to them, I'm like, it was designed to.
Yeah, like, don't worry, tick. I didn't, and then Sana, our friend Sana, when I first moved to London about 4 or 5 years ago, was like, you have, and like, I'm very obedient when it comes to Sana and her telling me I have to read a book.
Yeah, recommended, what's that book, We Were Liars, and I remember reading that in one night and being like,
yeah, it's absolutely stunning, but it's, again, one I wouldn't have picked up if it wasn't for Sana.
Yeah.
Yeah, she kind of was just like, look, you specifically need to read this. And I was like, okay, and I started reading and it wasn't a cliche. In fact, I think there's a lot of cliched books nowadays that were based on it because it's a lot, I think.
And maybe even
original
TV
text.
Series and stuff and films.
Yeah, and like even the mood of it is very like, I don't know, atmospheric, like hot, contained, small society, America.
Yeah, I think the mood of it
suburban
is, and the cultural references and stuff are very contemporary. Like I wouldn't be surprised if someone tries to adapt it and get Netflix to fund it into a series or
when
something.
Is it set, did we
1970s I think, because Pink Floyd are mentioned, but it took a long time for me to work that out,
embarrassingly. As soon as the tracks list came up when the boys are playing records down the phone to the girls. Yeah. Embarrassingly, for some reason, I thought that Elton John had written Candle in the Wind for Diana's death, and then was immediately like, oh my God, this must be set in the 90s.
That could be a Mandela effect.
Yeah, I don't know, but I just felt it was. But apparently it was written for Marilyn Monroe, so who knew in the 70s? But I went through a lot of this thinking it was a lot more recent than it actually is, which makes sense, but I guess records are hipster, so records didn't give me an idea. Okay, one of the things when I've been telling people what we've been reading this month, for people who haven't read it, it's really hard to summarise in a way that doesn't sound really basic. And it's also, I think, like, the way you summarise it shows what you really think of the book. And I think a lot of people summarise it in very different ways. So I thought we could all go around and maybe try and just be like, what would you say this book is about? Because baseline, you can just be like, oh, five sisters, they all kill each other, it's pretty fucked up. You know? And that's, like, reducing it, I think. So, like, if you had to summarise it for other people, what would you say it is?
It chronicles the demise of a neighbourhood.
Interesting.
In...
Very thematic, Lucy.
It's
looking at it on a more macro scale.
Well, it chronicles the demise of a neighbourhood, but in as a kind of character study of five girls who take their own lives within that neighbourhood, and from the perspective of the boys who obsess over them.
I don't feel like the neighbourhood demises.
So right at the end, it says that everyone moves out. This is a bit I've just read, guys. I finished it like 5 minutes ago.
Oh, okay, so it's fresh.
Yeah, very fresh. So they say at the end, like, once all the Lisbon girls died and the Lisbons moved out, gradually the whole town, like, every building, every house got knocked down, replaced. All the trees got taken because they were rotting. Oh,
yeah,
because
the trees all got taken down. Yeah,
so, like, it was completely destroyed. Not destroyed, renovated, in inverted commas, but that nice town that they'd grown up in collapsed. And then there's this big old paragraph about, like, that being symbolic and to do with the deaths, basically.
Yeah.
And how, like,
this idea of
they foresaw it.
See, I fucking missed that. Oh, yes! Like, I do remember them saying that, like, the Lisbon girls knew. It's like, so that's why they just got out early.
Prophetic fallacy? What's it called?
Or some shit, I don't know.
I think, so is it set in Detroit?
I don't know. Detroit was the
I don't know, because I also listened to Jeffrey Yundy's, like, a little interview that he did about this, and he lived in Detroit during that, and he was apparently thinking a lot about Detroit and the demise of, like, the use of workers.
Yeah, because that was a massive industry town.
Well, throughout the whole of the book, there's the graveyard strike.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And throughout the whole thing, and it's just, like, mentioned at the beginning, and then at the end, like, at the end of the book, it's like, oh, and then after 400 and so days, the strike ended.
Yeah.
It's crazy, isn't it? And also there's lots of talk at the beginning of, like, men who've lost their jobs, and therefore their masculinity and their livelihood and their source of income, and they gas themselves in their cars, like, and that's something that's quite common.
Oh, really?
And that was, like, right at the beginning.
And that's what Lux does at the end,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah. And it's, like, this, you're literally gassing yourself in industry. And also, apparently, Jeffrey Dundee's lost his job while writing this book.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. That's actually in the About the Author section.
Really?
Yeah.
But, like, again, like, some of the criticism that people have said to me on Twitter is that they say that, like, these girls are being used as a symbol of something bigger, and that they're being, like, objectified by the author by being, like, a symbol of society. Whereas I think he's very self-conscious of that and, like, plays on that and is parodying it.
Yeah, because the way that I would describe this book to someone, like, what I was going to say was, I think this book is about a group of men who for their whole lives have obsessed over these girls that killed themselves when they were all teenagers in school. And it's like, actually about them.
That's the indie film summary.
Yeah, it's about them, like, obsessing over them and not knowing them and trying to, like, figure out who they are through all of these clues and, like, the exhibits that they've collected over the years, and how, like, to me it feels like the narrative voice is, like, middle-aged by that point. And so it's very much, like, looking back on that year.
But the fact that there's still so much obsession in the voice of the narrator is what really weirds me out. So it's from a point of obsession, but not just obsession about the girls, but about, they fancy them, they love them in a way.
But they also can't tell them apart.
Yeah.
They don't love them, like, It's the whole, like, classic manic pixie dream girl trope thing. Mm. Even though the boys themselves don't have their own arc because they don't learn to become unobsessed with them because they literally remain obsessed with them throughout their whole adult lives. Mm. But it's the idea that the Lisbon girls aren't, like, individuals at all. They're just one block unit. The only two, I would say, that get their own, like, moments are Cecilia and Lux.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, and think, even so, it's like Cecilia... Cecilia is the Madonna and Lux is the Magdalene, and then the other three are just kind of like, you're neither, so we'll just blend you all into one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it reminds me a kind of a little bit of, like, Little Women.
I haven't read it. Like, Rowan loves when it.
That's, like, the trope of, like, all of these women all living in this house becoming this homogenous mass, but then also having their individual identities and really struggling to, like, exist outside of it because they've all grown up as these, like, women in this, like, ethereal space.
That's kind,
like,
of Pride and Prejudice-esque as well. Yeah. I love the sisterly dynamic.
Mm-hmm. I think you do get a sense of it.
Yeah.
I think you do get a sense of the fact that they have their own language and that there are things that they know about each other that no one else knows.
It's slightly witchy without being witchy. I really liked that.
It's charmed. It's charmed. They've all got their Ouija boards.
Yeah.
Yeah. So... I think one thing, like, really summarises it up for me, which is, like, right near the beginning, when Cecilia attempts suicide, like, the first time, she can hear the doctor going, oh, what's she got to worry about? Like, la la la, these kids. And she kind of comes round and goes, you've clearly never been a 13-year-old girl. Yeah. And to me, I think that summarises the whole thing, which is, like, this grown man thinking that he knows a young girl, and then the girl being like, you've never been a 13-year-old girl, you've never been a teenage girl, you know nothing. Yeah. Mm. And that's right at the beginning, and then it just plays through the whole thing of, like, these boys being like, why do they kill themselves? What's up with them? Like, what's going on? Mm. And they're like, you'll never know. You've never been us. You will never know.
And they're almost criticizing that trope with their lives. Like, they're always just trying to prove that they're individuals, but they move as a mass. And, like, the first time they're invited into the house for the party, and then they say, like, oh, we realised they're all, like, acting really differently, and they're all their own personality.
Yeah. And one of them was talking,
and the other one was, like, doing this activity, one of them was quiet in the corner, and then when they take them to the dance as well, they're just so loud.
Yeah, yeah. Like, every time they get close to them.
But then as soon as they move away from them again, they're, like, the mass. Yeah. But then again, I think it's weird, because I'm like, I think they treat themselves like that as well. It's like this dance of, like, the men and the women being kept separately. And it's like, the boys, is it the same boys that go to the party as the ones that go to the prom? Is it the same boys that go to the prom that turn up at the house at the end to see them all die? Like, it could be all different boys, but they talk about themselves in this collective.
Yeah. Well, the narrator, like, it's hard to tell if the narrator's an individual or a group, but you do know one thing, which is that whoever the narrator wasn't one of the boys that took one of the girls to prom.
Yeah.
That's all homecoming, whatever that dance was. That's one thing you do know, but the narrator was for sure at the party and at the house when they killed themselves all at the end.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's really... So I don't think the narrator is self-aware, but I think the author, Jeffrey, is very aware because there's so much really clever humour in there. Mm. And then the girls are really aware.
Well, there's so much weird shit that the narrator says.
Like the way that they lure the boys in to think they're taking them out and right at the end to take them away and the calls and everything. Yeah. Like, the girls are totally aware. But yeah, the narrator says loads of dumb stuff.
The narrator said... The one thing that really stood out to me, the narrator said that I was just like, was... Through the whole bit where they're talking about Lux having sex with all of these guys and, like, taking them up onto the roof and how they could see it.
Because they
were neighbours, so they, like, watched her have sex with all these different people. And when she was, like, if that's true as well, that's the other thing. Like, it was all rumours and, like, oh, this guy said he had sex with Lux. This guy said that he did this with Lux. And
we believe it because they all commented on some of the same things.
Yeah, so it's just like... Okay, sure, but because of this, like, fantasy that you have around her, and Lux is, like, the sexual one, the narrator said at one point, oh, even now, with our partners, we all imagine ourselves being with Lux. And it's like, what was she, like, 14, 15 or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're like now grown men. Yeah. And they're so obsessed with this girl. I remember this
phrase from that. They said like, oh, yeah. we've grown up and we've married these stable, like marriable, hot water bottle women.
Yeah.
And but we're still picturing this animal-esque, like, do you know, yeah. Well, it's an the animal quietness in the descriptions.
It's the way that she's silent that they like. Mm. That's what they point out is like, these women feel like they're going to take care of us, whereas we didn't know what Lux was going to do. She was completely unpredictable.
Mm. And she kind of stays that way because she dies. So it's just like eternally frozen in this state of like, to be fucked up. Also, I think that there's all this like, it's kind of presented in this kind of like emotional court case where it's like, here is some evidence. We interviewed these people.
Yeah.
As you'll see in Exhibit D, we're never presented with any of the exhibits. And that's the kind of thing of like, are they doing that on purpose? Because it's this thing of like, oh, there is no evidence. Or like, you know, they're trying to construct it like this almost like childlike argument
or a childlike detective crime mystery scene, like they're playing this
it's
game.
Like a boy's own what story kind of like
what I got out of the ending but I was reading fast was that they it was like an exhibition almost
in the
and they were auctioning they had loads of stuff like the I'm not was it in the treehouse I thought it was in the final house left in the neighborhood that hadn't been torn up I wasn't sure. But yeah, and they've got the hairbrush. They've kept all the things, and they kind of have them on display for everyone to just look at. Because the media got everyone so fascinated in the story of the Virgin Suicides, and they were obsessive about it. They used that to then create an exhibition on it.
Mm. Oh, I thought they just like kept adding to the thing they had in the treehouse. But maybe you're right.
Yeah, I could be wrong. Yeah. But that would explain the emphasis on the media attention as well, because that's like. Drawn
out. It's really strange because it sounds like they like travelled around to like track down all these different people and interview them and
to piece together the story.
Yeah, to the extent that they're still doing this when they're middle aged or even older. Yeah, who knows?
It's really the voice of a 37. Let's say it's 37 of like a
Jeffrey Donadies was 33 when this was published.
Oh, okay. So like the voice of an older guy. Discussing pubescent women is just creepy. Like the Lux
thing.
That
made me think about it though, because it's also like, not to like fight his corner, but I think it's also if it's the study of the demise of a society, I think in some ways like I think he kind of like doesn't try and tell the story of the girls because we never really.
Well,
know
I think
them.
We're talking about but then, the narrator, not the author. I'm talking about the narrator, not the author.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't quite know.
Like, where's the line between the two?
Yeah, because there are definite moments where it's
so weird, isn't it?
Jeffrey Eugenides's, like, his humour is coming through in the things he is describing. But
I think he's laughing at the boys. The author's definitely laughing at the boys. Mm. Do you know where I kind of drew some parallels with this is John Green's Paper Towns?
Mm-hmm.
Because in Paper Towns, Quentin Q... So Margot goes missing.
Oh, spoilers! skip 2 minutes ahead.
This is very much overview. There's no spoilers in this.
I've only seen the film.
Margot goes missing, and Q is her neighbor, and Margot leaves clues, and Q is just like, she has chosen me. It is I who must go and solve all of these clues that she has left. Me, I'm the special one, I'm the chosen one. She picked me to go and find her. This is a quest I must go on. And I feel like that's what the boys are. It's like, the Lisbon girls picked us. We are the chosen ones.
Yeah.
We must understand them and save them. Like, right at the end, it's like, we're their saviours. We're going to save them. And then they couldn't save them. So now it's like, they chose us. We must understand them. Like that's the vibe.
Because the whole idea is that they were going to drive them special. Off and help them escape.
Yeah. They think they're special, and they think that the Lisbon girls picked them. I think the Lisbon girls used them.
Yeah, I think the Lisbon girls have so much agency in this. Mm. I think, which is really refreshing.
Mm. It's weird as well. Like, how much would this book be different if it was written by a woman? Because I think there's...
Well, maybe we'll male. See that because the film is directed by a woman. So will we... Was the screenplay written by a woman? Or
we can Google it.
Yeah, we can look
It's interesting because there's lots of like female heroines that I look up to that I'm like, written by a man, written by an old man, written by an old... I mean, Matilda even.
Yeah.
We don't even get Matilda. Like, you know, a lot of the heroines that we look up to are written by men. And I don't know how I feel about that. I mean, I love the heroines and I trust the men. But I'm like...
We completely went off tangent there.
Off the tangent. We did.
Oh, that's fine.
One thing that I wanted to add, because we were talking about the narrator and stuff, I got to about halfway through the book before I realised it would never be revealed who the narrator was.
Yeah. Really? Oh, I thought it was going to be revealed at the end the whole time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I kind of just got to the middle. I was like, fine, I'm never going to know who it is. It's just a conglomerate of boy.
Yeah.
Young boy.
The boy.
Boy.
Yeah, it's weird because it's almost like this, like it's like unselfish to not talk about your own history or story or name yourself as the narrator.
Yeah.
But then it's also all about how they interacted with the girl's story. And
If you haven't read
What even happened to the parents at the end? We don't know.
They went. Well, they left.
But where did they go?
But also we know that they did break up.
Oh, yeah.
Because really near the beginning, they offhandedly mention, like, when they're separated. Mm. But, yeah, because if you haven't read it, the narrator constantly uses we and our.
Mm.
There's no I.
Can we talk about the parents?
Yeah. So one of the things that I wanted to talk about was, like, this thing of, like, the mum being this strong Catholic figure who believes in the idea of the virgin, and she doesn't really... I get the impression she doesn't really want her children to go through puberty. And then there's, like, almost, like, pagan idea of these, like... You know, like, they're like, helping people summon spirits, and they're very, like... It seems like weather follows them around a lot.
Yeah.
Like, it's always, like, stuff is raining. If something happens bad, like, it rains. If, you know, when they're happy and things are peaceful, they're sitting out in the sunshine in their, like, strap tops.
Oh,
and
I hadn't noticed that, yeah.
It's all, like, it's all about this, like, weather. But it's... But this strong Catholic thing they're carrying around with them. And, like, the first... Cecilia, when she first tries to kill herself, is holding, like, a Catholic relic of...
A picture of the Virgin Mary.
With 555 Mary on it, which is never explained, and I'm going to spark notes everything.
Why did no one call that number?
Yeah, I was like, why is that unresolved? Then, why is she holding the Virgin Mary?
The other Lisbon girls kept on leaving the same picture of the Virgin Mary for all the boys to find with 555 Mary, or random notes written on the back of them, like little messages, which...
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That's why they thought they were the chosen ones, because they were, like, communicating with them. But on some of them, or at least one of them, it did have the 555 Mary on it. It's like, why did no one call that number?
Why is
and
that
that's also why I'm just like, cult.
Yeah, I assumed we were going to find out they were all a part of a cult. Or they'd set one up because of the shrine and all of that.
But then I think we're encouraged to, like, not... That's what a lot of the newspapers
I think if someone
said,
had just phoned that number, we would have all of our answers.
He was like, Mary, 5555.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think...
Also, is this it... whole... Sorry, I just realised. Is it symbolic that Mary, the daughter called Mary was the last one left alive. Like, she tried to kill herself and failed, and then killed herself, had to kill herself again.
Interesting.
I don't know, just thought about that. Just
because, like, the first and the last one try to kill themselves and don't, and almost, like, come back from the dead. And, like, when the other four die and Mary's left, they kind of almost commemorate a bench to her, even though she's still alive.
Yeah.
Do you just want her to die now?
Yeah.
And then she, then she just died.
Incredibly sad. But I think it's also interesting because I was thinking about, like, this idea of, like, not thinking biblically and about like Roman Catholicism, but like before that, like the idea of the virgin is something that you sacrifice to get something back. Like, it's like, we'll get some virgins and sacrifice them and get something back. You know, and it's thing of like them sacrificing themselves. It's like their agency. They still recognize that they're being sacrificed, but then they're doing it. It's
like self-sacrifice.
Yeah. And like the women in like literature who've killed themselves, who get like Ophelia.
Mm.
Who like, we don't really know why she kills herself, but everyone's like, it's because of love. She didn't get Hamlet's love, so she died. Yeah. And that's never made clear, and it's this thing of, like, all these women who are supposed to have died for love, but did they? And these, like, I don't know. I think it's really interesting, man, basically.
I just remembered something about the end that's well weird. The narrator has this big rant about how all the suicides were so selfish because the boys never got to get to know them better.
Yeah, does he mean that?
The narrator does, sure. Because I forgot about there's so many aspects of the narration.
They probably feel tricked by the girls.
It's the envy. There's a lot of envy in there. There's a lot of, like, we want the attention kind of elements of it. But yeah, I just remembered, like, that's so weird.
Yeah, but it talks about how they've forgotten their loved ones and they've become self-interested.
Yeah.
The girls took into their own hands decisions better left to God. They became too powerful to live among us, too self-concerned, too visionary, too blind. It's very, very, I don't know. It shook me up a bit, I think, the first time I read it, and it just every time I do, because I think suicide is something that we're all still trying to understand as a society.
Mm-hmm.
And this, like, gives us less answers, but it also, like, warns us off finding them in some ways.
Yeah. The other thing I kind of was shocked by was that the final suicides all happened at the same time.
Yeah, I was expecting a staggered.
Yeah, because I think it's because the opening chapter is right at the end, where they're like, oh, and then the last one went the same as Therese, like Mary did it the same way as Therese, sleeping pills, and it's like the last one. So I was just like, oh, so there's like, it's going to be staggered. And then Cecilia kills herself as the first one. And then I genuinely was reading it being like, oh, come on, when's the next suicide going to be? And I was like, fuck, I don't think like that. What the hell?
Yeah. You want, yeah.
But I was just like, come on, give me the juicy bits.
I was reading right to the end to find all the suicides.
Yeah.
Like,
because you're like, There's one suicide at the beginning, and then there's the whole book, and then there's four at the end.
But it's kind of good because we actually got to know the characters.
One of the characters.
So,
although I quite liked Bonnie. I don't know what it was. I was just drawn to her.
Bonnie's quite cool.
I don't know why. Drawn to the Lisbon girls, not even knowing them. What's that about?
Because
I just like the name.
What was the thing about Therese? She has this little passage where she's teaching Mary about the biology of an iguana using an iguana toy, and I was like, me as hell. Like, what do I do on a Saturday night? I'm gonna whip my iguana toy out and I'll like teach someone about iguana biology. That's what I gathered about Therese. Sorry, that was tangenty.
No, I think it's I don't know.
But that's the humour in it, and there's so much humour in it.
I think, and also I think there's lots of, I don't know, I felt bad laughing at points, because points that obviously you're supposed to laugh at, like, and if that's where I hear, like, Jeffrey Eugenides' voice, I wonder if he has daughters, but, like, when he, like, talks about how he, like, when they're all in their period and he has to dispense, like, painkillers, like, bread to ducks.
Yeah.
And, you know, stuff like that. But there's also stuff that I found really morbidly funny, like this idea of, like, when Cecilia, like, spikes herself on the
fence. I know what you're
saying. And then they just, like, do you know what's wrong with this society? Fences. And then the whole community gather together and take the fence down.
So my...
Because they're like, sorry, we just have too many spiky fences around.
Yeah. Like, the bit that really sticks with me about Cecilia's suicide, because everything's written incredibly cinematically. It's written for cinema. It's not written as a book.
Really?
So, like, for example, this is what's his name, Mr. Lisbon, will walk into one of the bathrooms and the moonlight shining through and reflecting off a chunk of the mirror will be described in a way that you can perfectly visualize. And one of those bits as well, which is immaculately timed, is Cecilia spiking herself on the fence.
The sound of it.
The way
that that's described.
Then there's silence, then the sprinklers come on. And that is just so cinematic.
Yeah,
you can literally...
It's like comedic timing.
Yeah, exactly. And it's so comedic and so dry. So dry, so morbid. But yeah, that's like stage direction or something. That's not like a book. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, true. That's kind of like him directing, being like, then this happened.
Yeah.
The spend and sprinkles come on. I wonder if that happens in the film.
Should we talk about the sex? I just remember
this is the banging book club, but we talk about sex.
There's so much, especially, in fact, I'm going to whip out.
So what sex are we talking about? Lux's sex? Lux's supposed sex?
Virgin suicides, and yet there is one completely non-virgin fact. We don't know about the others. But
actually, you know, we do know for a fact because she goes to the hospital to get a pregnancy test.
And she's being fucked on the roof.
Mm. She might just be dry humping.
Yeah. She's putting vinegar up her vag.
Yeah, because she gets an inspection. She goes to hospital.
Yeah.
And has to lie about it. It's all so disturbing. Like, I just think that this mum is, like, really... Like, I hate when it's, like, blame the parents, but I'm genuinely, like...
Oh, yeah. There was Mrs. Lisbon.
This mum, though.
I don't know. It was Mrs. Lisbon's fault.
Because it also...
Mrs. Lisbon in the drawing room with...
vinegar.
With the vinegar.
With the sexism. with the Bible.
With the Catholicism. With the image of Mary.
Because also, you notice the stuff like when they go into the house and they see all these family photos around, they see the last picture, they stop taking pictures of the girls after like the oldest one turned 12.
Yeah.
Because they don't like the idea of them being teenagers and growing up. And especially when they like stop them going to school, I'm also just like, where's the child protection? Where are the people? I don't know how you roll an American man, but like where are the truancy officers?
All of the
here?
Signs are just like, it was just
keeping them in
abusive.
This big house womb.
And then also just like not keeping the house clean. Like they were all probably so ill by the end of that. Just like physically ill just from not having any fresh air. But yes, the sex.
One thing my cousin says, I saw my cousin earlier and she loves this book and loves the film. And I was commenting on like right at that point, I just read a really bit of a creepy bit. And I was like, oh, the narrator's a bit gross. And she was like, yeah, it's really odd reading a man talk about women, especially when you get to the bit where Lux is talking about contraceptives. Because you're like, some of that stuff, you're like, yeah, that could be an old wives' tale. And some of it, you're like...
Wait, when does she talk about contraception?
How would she ever get that knowledge? How would she ever draw that? She's using spermicide at one point, I think.
Oh, yeah, she is.
So, like, she must have found some
stuff.
But
then it's, like, whatever she can get hold of.
Yeah.
That's the thing. You could probably have bought spermicide over the counter, but you wouldn't have been able to get the pill unless you were a married woman.
But she's not leaving the house at this
point. She's not even allowed to leave the house. It's like she's getting, like, vinegar and ketchup.
Although oh, yeah, she's creating her own spermicide, isn't she?
Yeah.
But then there's points where she actually has some, I think. Yeah.
Maybe she just gets it from her mum's cabinet.
Bless you.
Thank you.
Yeah, she describes... Yeah, maybe it's something like that. But I remember Mary just commenting on the fact that...
Maybe the boys bring it.
on the fact that it's like... It feels like a very male voice writing about contraception.
But maybe the boys bring the spermicide.
You know, when the new couple move into the house after all the shit's gone down, and they look on the roof and there's always different bottles. It's like, oh, does somebody have a salad up here?
Yeah, there you go.
With
that's
the old rag. The thing that really got me was she's wiping her vagina with an old rag that sits up there all the time. Yeah. Not up her vagina, up on the roof. But, oh, poor Lux, you must have been horrible, really painful.
But it's also said that she doesn't really enjoy it.
Yeah.
And she's not like...
Because the boys have the theory that it's her way of dealing with grief and depression.
Yeah.
Well, people say... Well, any form of, like... That is a form of self-harm.
Yeah.
Repeatedly having sex when you don't want to.
Yeah, definitely.
And making yourself go through anything like that.
But it's this thing of, like, the other girls not participating. It's just this, like, one... The one, like, kind of, like, temptress. And then the other four... Virgin.
Yeah, and she's she's the one that like leads them into the house. Leeches.
Yeah,
well, she's the one that leads them into the
but
house.
They're doing
when the...
other things, aren't they, to self destruct?
Yeah,
like not eating enough and other things.
Mm.
that you hear about?
Not eating, not sleeping, I don't know.
Yeah, stuff like that. Oh, Bonnie is it Bonnie that's not sleeping and she's walking out every night and standing outside at the front porch.
Yeah.
And then Lux is smoking. Don't know what Teresa and Mary are doing.
Yeah.
But I feel like they're all trying to self-destruct in different ways.
Control thing.
The boys are just obsessed with the sexual one. I don't know if
this is like a horrible thing to say, but like, I think the first time I read it, I genuinely thought there was some kind of sexual abuse happening in the house. They were so obsessed with what was happening to the girls and how they were acting. I was like, there's got to be something else going on here. And I felt like there was some kind of sexual abuse happening in the house, or the way they were acting, especially with this control around their bodies and sex, like it was really disturbing. And I was like, there's got to be something darker going on. I don't know if
know if it would have been sexual abuse. It could have been, but I definitely for sure think abuse, mental abuse, emotional abuse, maybe physical abuse.
Yeah, as soon as you're not letting your child out the house, one, not feeding them properly, another. I couldn't understand that, the grocery list though. So I'm not quite sure what they were eating, but it was not good. Mm. And not letting them contact people.
Yeah.
All of that. So they were being abused.
Yeah. But I think it's this maybe thing of
cult was actually run by the mother.
Potentially. I mean, she might have gone on to run a cult. Who knows what happened?
She'd have been pretty good at it.
But I think, like, it's this, like, I think the book isn't just good, it's like a masterpiece, is because it's to do with the society and how they respond. Yeah. And it's this whole thing of, like, the untouchable family, like this family structure that you're not allowed to question, you're not allowed to penetrate, and you're like, you know, that's what the Lisbons do with their daughter. Like, yeah. Like happens on their side of the lawn, like
that no one gets involved. Yeah. I think it's also interesting how the perception of Cecilia just changes over time. That kind of like ties into the whole like the wider picture theme of like it being looking at this one society, but then also like all of the media and like press and all of that stuff. So at the start it's like, oh my god, this is such a shock. It's a tragedy.
Yeah.
And then the Lisbon girls are
no one wants to acknowledge it's suicide as well.
Yeah, it's an accident. Oh, the incident. Mm. And then the Lisbon girls are all really weird. But then it's kind of made out that they're not as weird because Cecilia was the strange one.
Mm. Yeah.
She topped herself. She was the weird one. And then it switches to it was inevitable. She was always gonna die. She wasn't gonna amount to anything.
Yeah,
like it suddenly switched. It went from this like horrible tragedy of like this 13-year-old girl killing herself to, she was really weird. Nothing would have amounted to
and
her
she
anyway.
Brought her sisters down as well, so she became like demonized.
Yeah. Completely. And I think as well as loads of stuff in the media, like they don't pick up the story at first because nobody knows what to do with it. A few months later, they're all like, think piece about suicide.
Yeah.
Finding other people. Do you think that...
What do you think of the grieving day? Day of grieving.
Oh, awful. Terrible.
You can see it happening.
So 70s, yeah. Well, such like it's such a primitive response to suicide.
Mm.
Well, have a suicide day.
Do you think there's an equivalent that we have now? Of that, or like something that's like
there must be like suicide awareness days and weeks,
but that's it's not local,
or like, well, there's definitely like mental health like awareness week and stuff.
Do you think that's a good thing or a bad, because if we're thinking that like maybe a grieving day is like a bad way to react, like
I think when it's reactionary it can be problematic. You've got to be a lot more careful about how you do it. But whereas if it's just like an annual thing that happens where you just like direct a lot of attention
raising
to
awareness.
One particular like problem in society, then I think that's fine. Because it's not being like, oh shit, this thing happened. We should probably deal with that. Okay, we'll have a grieving day, I guess. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like, not actually, you've got to be, I think a good thing would be to be proactive and like, you know, imagine if that school actually every day had a mental health day. And before anyone was killing themselves.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's because it was like reactionary and actually it wasn't helpful. Mm, it wasn't helping. It wasn't doing anything.
They didn't give any guidelines to the teachers, did they? So the teachers were like,
well, yeah, there was
how
that
do
one,
we portray
like,
the importance of life?
But there was that one therapist teacher that that came in and the girl spoke to.
Yeah.
And then there was like this weird mystery about like her disappearing as soon as the rest of the girls killed themselves and they couldn't track her down. And it turns out she was using a fake name and maybe wasn't a qualified therapist or teacher. But when the girls were talking to her, apparently they seemed so much happier and they were
that's doing a creepy
really well.
Bit.
So it's just really strange, and I think it's like another one of those. A lot of it, I think, is it isn't a mystery, and it's, I think it's mysteries that the boys slash narrator are projecting.
Yeah. Because I think, like, I wanted to ask this at the end of the podcast, but I think it's kind of interesting to talk about throughout, is, like, why do we think they killed themselves? And should we know? And do we think that Jeffrey Genedes is trying to tell us why they killed themselves? Or is he not coming to...
He's not trying to tell us.
I don't think he's Jeffrey Genedes knows. I don't think he knows.
I would say he doesn't know. No. But then maybe he... I don't know. I always go back and forward on it. Every time I read it, I'm like...
If I were to write a book, I'd know. If I were to write a book like this, I would have already made my mind up and I'd be deciding whether to tell the readers.
There's lots of catty... What I kind of, like, liked... I use the word liked in a very loose sense of the word, but I really liked these catty references to the, like, the term self-esteem. Because they're always, like, lots of people blame it on self-esteem. And it's, like, this is passage apparently I've copied out because I'm a dickhead. page 37. It's, like, we listened to them, but it was clear they'd received therapy to know the right answers. They sounded rehearsed, relying on concepts of self-esteem and other clumsy words on their tongue.
Yeah.
And then at the end, like Mrs. Pearl, who, like, writes about it in her journals and is, like, a professional therapist, she's, like... She thinks it's all about self-esteem and, like, writes chapters on it and is like, oh, this is a proof that they didn't have very high self-esteem. And I think Jeffrey Genedes is always, like, criticising that and being like, it's more than that, it's more than that. And I think we were talking earlier about, like, the reactions to 13 Reasons Why on Netflix and, like, reducing suicide in this way that's really, like, simplistic. And I think...
But also none of us have watched that.
Oh, yeah, I haven't watched it either.
Yeah.
I'm kind of like this thing of, like, trying to find reasons why. Like, 13? Were there only 13? I don't know.
Well, it's blaming 13 people, you know, like, isn't it? The idea is it blames 13 people. Mm. She sends a tape to each person and says, this is how you contributed to my death.
Yeah.
So it's very
The Lisbon
vengeful.
Girls would never do that.
No.
Yeah.
But what was I going to say about... Oh, yeah, because we were asking, like, why we think... that they killed themselves.
Yeah.
And so one of my theories, which is this is fiction, and so it's got to be, like, spectacular, is some cult, some Virgin Mary cult thing. But then my, like, realistic reason is that Cecilia was genuinely a depressed teen, a suicidal teen, and she killed herself.
Because they all seemed really shocked when that happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then... the grief on the other four sisters basically hit them so hard and no one knew how to deal with that, and so it spiraled and their mum became really abusive and controlling and they saw no other way out and they got depressed and trapped. That's literally, like, why I think that, like, is that,
and trapped.
I genuinely think that it could be that simple, but then also I'm just like, I like the way that the book also kind of makes you be like, is it a Virgin Mary cult thing?
Well, it's the fact that they all then planned it right at the end. That's what I think is, like, so they were depressive.
They planned it, but they also allowed themselves to all die alone.
Oh, that's interesting.
They, like yeah, let's they all do it at the same time, but we're all going to do it differently in different rooms and just, like, be by ourselves.
And that's really interesting. Not, like, you know, they didn't all jump off a bridge at the same time or anything.
Yeah, which is what you'd expect because of the way that they're portrayed as a homogenous.
Yeah, and, like, they're called lemmings at some point as well, which just, like, conjures up that 90s game of people just literally just, like, walking off cliffs together.
Yeah.
When actually it's a lot more private than that. But then, I don't know.
But they clearly all discuss it beforehand. Like, they're not ashamed of it.
Mm. It was as if the timings of it were perfect, though.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, so the timings of it were so perfect because the boys were in, like, the living room or whatever with Lux, and then Lux was like, oh, the girls will be down soon, I'm going to go in the car, I'll meet you there. They hear a crash bang in the cellar, which is Bonnie hanging herself, but they don't know that at the time. And then, so they're just, like, hanging out in the living room, kitchen or whatever, and they're like, do we go upstairs and check on them? Nah. Because they think they're all upstairs.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, let's go see what that thing was downstairs and see if we can help them pack. Go downstairs. And that's where they find Bonnie.
Yeah.
And in the time that they go downstairs, Mary comes downstairs, or she was already in the kitchen, and that's when she kills herself in the oven, looks in the car, Mary upstairs.
Yeah.
Like, all of, like they timed it. It's almost like mousetrap,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. They hear Bonnie. So Bonnie is, like, the trigger of that crash. And because also the boys are, like, they were all on standby to help each other as well. I don't know, it's just very...
What freaks me out... Well, the reason the boys are invited over is, I think...
To be witnesses, because, I think.
Because I think they think that the parents won't find them. I think that... Obviously, they'd find Mary, but I think the parents... What's portrayed as their lack of attentiveness and their attentiveness decreasing as they get more depressed. The parents, I think. Yeah. And I think that the girls are actually like, parents might not tell anyone that we've died or might act really odd or might not notice.
Was it the boys? Like, we don't know what the boys did right after.
They ran home, didn't they?
Did they run home? Did they call
the police? And they watch it all happen.
Yeah.
So I think the parents did notice and...
Yeah, no, they must. But I think it's the fear that they wouldn't. Yeah, the fear that the parents wouldn't.
So they needed tell witnesses.
Yeah, because the house is getting slowly worse and worse. They could have just left the bodies. Sorry, this is very morbid, but that's why I assume the boys were invited over.
But one of the bodies is in the car in the drive.
Yeah.
Or in a garage. Is it in a garage? Do they have garages?
Mary's is in the oven, so she would have been found. Mary's head is in the oven.
There's this part where they're like, he says that they... We thought we knew the girls and they invited us round to show them that we didn't know them.
Yeah. Oh, that's clever.
Fucked up, man. But it's interesting.
Well, yeah, that's what I think it was. It was like a big F you, like... Well,
it was a big fuck you, definitely.
It's very like Angela Carter, like, princesses is locked in the tower searching for help. Knights come for help. They're like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know if it's a feminist act. Or just, like, super sad.
I think it was super sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's that thing of, like, oh, yeah, you really showed them, but I also, like, oh, fucking no,
it's their way of reclaiming power back.
But I think it's really dangerous to talk about suicide in that way.
I mean more the process of inviting the boys round, making it a performance, almost. That element of it, and, like, leaving the letters and all of that, and grasping so many people's attention that's... Not the media, but the local people.
Yeah, and
you're right. It is dangerous.
Even then, just like using the word attention in the same sentence as suicide, like feels so dirty to me. Do you know what I mean? Even though I kind of like know what you're getting at, but I'm just like, oh, we have to be so careful.
Yeah.
I had another point thing. Oh, we were talking about being sad. Like the thing that made me really sad was like Mary on her own at the end before she like.
Oh, God, actually topped herself. Home.
Like, you know, imagine that. Imagine you created a suicide pact with your sisters. You have three sisters that are left. You're like, cool, bye, see you on the other side. And then you wake up and all your sisters are dead and you survived.
Yeah.
And then you just top yourself a few weeks later.
Asking, like, waiting for her to go.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Well, the bench is symbolic of that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is there anything else to? Well, there's loads to discuss, but should we?
Yeah, like I think we've talked about all of that.
Do you know what? We've gone through this whole thing, but we've not said the phrase "male gaze" once.
Oh yeah, I know.
God, yeah,
I think that's what we mean every time we talk about the narrator and the boys. Like that whole thing is the male gaze.
It's the It's the ultimate manic pixie dream girling, but it's quite self-aware. Well, it's very self-aware.
I think it's warding you off manic pixie dream girling, and it's basically like the early John Green Imagine People Complexly.
Yeah.
But like, it's, I don't know. It's weird because this has existed for so long, but then I'm like, have people who've written these, like not John Green, but other people written these cliche books about suicide, I'm like, have they read this? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's existed for so long to criticise that way of talking about suicide.
Yeah. And the way of talking about women.
Yeah.
And young girls.
Yeah,
because
female girls will always remain a mystery.
It's almost like we're all individuals or something. You have to work us all out one by one. Fuck it, what admin? Okay, would you have sex with this book?
No, I love the book, but I would not go there.
I would not be intimate with this book.
No,
I would
read it again.
Pay for its therapy.
I would give this book a year's worth of clinical spermicide, so no more ketchup was used.
Yeah, oh my gosh.
Just give this book a condom.
Yeah.
Yeah. And lots of help and loving support.
Yeah.
And
oh, poor book.
I know.
Oh, poor book.
But
maybe the boys need it too.
Yeah. That being said, everyone. I think that people who listen to this and maybe haven't read it, it's still like one of my best like favorite. Oh yeah, I feel really, so sad really talking about
it. There's no twists or turns. It's not a plot driven book, so you like even knowing the plot, you can still get loads out.
If you want to like know how to write a fucking amazing novel, like read it. Like fuck me, it's just,
it's Jesus, so good.
Jesus, blasted in Christ. It's so
it takes about 4 hours to read if you're a fast reader. So,
but yeah, and I think it's
I am
like,
not a fast reader. It's took like, me longer than that.
I really.
I'm maybe like 6 hours.
I just, well, for me, I loved how it commented on society not knowing what to do with it. And for me, that's like what I took away from it was like, we need, as a society, we need to deal with suicide. You can't just leave it to one family.
Mm.
Like, it's not a one family issue. You can't just take away the fence and be like, sorted. Nobody else is going to kill themselves now.
Yeah. I really liked.
I'm surprised they still had sleeping pills in the house for Mary to take right at the end.
I mean, they don't leave to get rid of them.
Huh?
They don't leave to get rid of them. So, like.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
Or maybe they left in her because they wanted her to kill herself.
Mm.
Shall we stop there?
Hey, our Nando's now.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Next month, as we mentioned, we are reading Come As You Are by Emily Nagoski, which is like a scientific book about sex.
Mm-hmm.
I think the subtitle is something about getting better sex.
But well, like, I'm really hoping it's just going to tell me how to masturbate properly.
But it's got loads of like sex research stuff in it as well. We are going to eat our Nando's whilst watching The Virgin Suicides. Mm. We're having a banging book club sleepover, guys.
Oh my god!
And then in the
this is our jobs.
Yeah, I know. And then in the morning, we're going to record us talking about the film, which will be the next minisode that you will hear.
Yes. So if you want to hear us talking about the film, tune in a fortnight, mm-hmm. 2 weeks' time. Apparently, only British people use the word fortnight, I found out today. British and Indian.
What do you say instead? What
2 weeks. Weekly? No, like bi-weekly. No, not bi-weekly.
Bi-weekly. Yeah.
Bi-weekly means twice a week. No, fortnightly.
Never understood if biannual fortnight meant once every 2 years. But anyway, right, sorry.
Fortnight means 2 weeks.
Yeah, so in 2 weeks' time, if you're American, or fortnight in a fortnight.
I just realised that fortnight means nothing when you think about like the individual words. Anyway, oh my god, my brain.
Yeah, it's like late. It's maybe 11.
We should start watching the film. Shit.
Yeah.
Okay, love you, bye. Follow us on Twitter at Bagging Book Club.
Leave us lots of nice reviews. Kisses for everyone.
You are now a Furby.
I'm gonna get you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.